Hello and welcome to Pro U Podcast episode number 338. PYP is 5. It's a big day, big day, big moment for me, people. Big achievement. You know, my claim to fame ever since I started the podcast is that I just haven't quit. I haven't given up. And when I think about the things that I'm proud of that are, you know, part of my Pro U path are things that I've done for a very long time and I've been consistent at them. And now when I think, wow, I've put out a podcast or two every week, every Thursday for 5 years. I mean, I just like saying that. It just sounds cool. But I am. I mean, the last 5 years have been the best 5 years of my life, and that's direct correlation to this podcast and how much it's affected me, helped me heal. I know it's contributed to my growth as a person, being able to share everything in my life, my art, my best friend Zen, you know, just having a platform. And, you know, if you don't have listeners, you really, you know, you don't have much of a podcast. And I do want to give a special shout out to Sir Hardwick for just green lighting this venture of mine 5 years ago. I had no clue, no clue at all what my message was. And now I'm so thankful. You know, I am a messenger, and I have a message, and I know what it is, and it just brings me peace. So thank you, Chris. Love you, love you, love you. And secondly, I want to thank Nico, the Canadian assassin, for being the best producer and just a wonderful friend, and he's just a dynamite person. But never cross him, because Nico and Costa will visit you. I just love saying that. Nico and his brother Costa. That's what's happened. That's what's happening in year 5. So big hugs to the people that have helped, that have contributed, that have shared, that have followed, that have listened, that have emailed. Everything and all in the above. I'm just grateful, and to everyone that has listened since last week or since the beginning, from the bottom of my heart, thank you, thank you, thank you. Enjoy. Thank you, thank you, thank you. PYP is 5. My little baby's growing up. I remember just yesterday when, but thank you. Without listeners, you don't really have much of a podcast. And, you know, Zen turned 5, podcast turns 5. I'm going to turn 55, so I've been thinking about this stuff, you know, since the beginning of the year, and just, you know, what the podcast has meant, and I mentioned on a previous episode, you know, finding out my purpose. It was like this little, I don't know, just something that kind of fell into place going, cool, I'm a messenger, I have a message, cool, that's done, that's what I do. But my job, number one, dog owner, number two, podcaster, number three, trainer. And, you know, Zen just obviously the most important thing in the world to me. But when I think about the podcast and what it's done and its effect on me, and, you know, there was a moment last year when I thought, wow, what if it didn't continue? And it would just, I would not like my life without doing the podcast, literally. But first, I'm going to read a little bit, and this is a little, well, I don't know, late, But I did the episode on patience, and I just saw this, and it was a pretty cool article. So have a little patience. It's a virtue we all desperately need. But do you know what patience really is? It's a special virtue that allows you to tolerate and accept something dreary without getting upset, irritated, and even angry. For example, when you get stuck in traffic, when you wait in line at a bank for hours, or when you try to paint a picture to someone who simply doesn't have the capacity to understand you. These are all situations in which a normal person would be furious, but a patient person would be cool as a cucumber. You may think it's impossible to stay calm in such situations, but if you have self-control, you can do it. That's the virtue we're talking about. If you want to keep cool in situations where you'd rather yell and scream like a crazy person, you need to have a lot of self-control. Patience is about staying calm in impossible situations and being able to say to yourself, I'm fine. It's okay. Just look at the beautiful day ahead of us. Everything is going to be okay. There's no need to get upset over the things we can't change. Instead of getting angry and infuriated when you hit the morning traffic jam, play some relaxing music and use this time to think about your actions. Use this time to relax and chill because you're not going anywhere, right? Instead of yelling at the driver in front of you, give him a kind smile because he's in this as much as you are. Having patience means that you're in control of your actions. I like that line. Having patience means that you're in control of your actions. You accept that it is what it is, and there's nothing you can do to change a situation that's making you feel irritated. It means accepting things as they are, dealing with the situation, and simply letting things run their course. It means not letting a simple thing like a traffic jam or a long queue at the bank ruin your day. It means not yelling at your kids because they forgot to do their homework or didn't pick up their toys. It means keeping your head cool even if you feel like everyone and everything is against you. And I had stated before, like, my goal, stay calm. That's, like, what I want to do is just be calm in every situation. And then I did this podcast about patience. And this one right here talked about it, you know, tying those two exact things together. You need to be patient to be happy. What we all want in life is to be happy. It's our ultimate goal, and everything we do is to make our life happier. Every step we take, every decision we make, everything we do is supposed to take us one step closer to being happy. We study hard to get a better job, we get married, have kids, buy a house, and we do it all because we believe it's what we need to be happy. But the problem is that we often rush with our decisions and we don't allow ourselves the time to think it through. What we need to do is be more patient and give ourselves the time to think about it and finally make the right decision. Being patient will make you happier in life because every decision you make will be a well thought, thorough one, and a decision you will not regret later. So there you go. Staying calm, being patient gives you clarity. You know, all these things, they all tie into being pro you. And that was from the Optimal Positivity site. And this, once again, is from the Higher Perspective. And this is kind of, I don't know, I guess I would normally find the 6 common habits of happy people. They might kind of look for that. But here's 6 common habits of unhappy people and how to be happy. So just a different spin on it. Being unhappy or depressed can be a very energizing, consuming process, constantly draining them all of motivation. Draining them of all motivation. 24/7. It is important that you remain patient with them as they go at their own pace in restoring their happiness. Once again, 1, future worry. People who are depressed or unhappy usually have a sense of worry for what might happen in the future. They are never truly living in the moment and choose to look far ahead into their lives, thinking of all the horrible outcomes they could suffer from. It is important you try to remember them. You try to remind them that they must live fully in the present. Otherwise, they will never truly be happy with what is going on in the future. Focus on the here and now, what they can improve on, and how they can get themselves back to being happy. 2, won't let go of the past. Depressed or unhappy people often dwell on the past. They often dwell on their past mistakes and regret a lot of things that they used to do. This ties to the first habit we discussed of not truly living in the present moment. In order for them to regain their happiness, they're going to have to stop being so hard on themselves for previous mistakes that they will never be able to fix. They must be able to forgive themselves as well as not dwelling on whatever happened in order for them to move on officially. And do you see how it's about them doing them, you know? No one can come in and make you happy. 3, extremely negative. Depressed or unhappy people will resort to extreme negative addictions, usually food being the main go-to for comfort, sometimes going even further to more dire substances like drug use or alcohol abuse for relieving themselves of their existing pain. It's important that we try to get them the help that they need in order to get over their nasty habits. They need to begin the recovery process from all horrible things they've consumed in the past years while they've been unhappy. 4, impulse spending. This is usually one of the more obvious habits of depressed and unhappy people. They will impulsively buy things to get an additional emotional boost for themselves. That would be a helicopter flying over Hollywood. Thank you. They will impulsively buy things to get an additional emotional boost for themselves or a chance of feeling temporary peace within. This can result in a very self-destructive manner. Sometimes people do not know how to turn off their impulsive buying and overspending ways. They spend too much money on things they never even needed to begin with. 5, hard on themselves and other. People who are unhappy or depressed are more often than not hard on themselves as well as others. They find unnecessary criticisms to make on themselves and deliberately tell others what they are doing wrong without giving any friendly advice afterward. They focus on the things that they need desperate improvements, yet they carry themselves in a very ugly way because of it. It's important to remind them that everyone is built differently and that it's not a competition between anyone but themselves. Last one, number 6, consistent complaints. People who are depressed or unhappy tend to complain about almost everything. They have a hard time finding the bright side in things they want to enjoy, so they feel the need to let others know just how unhappy they are with whatever is going on. Even if it's the smallest of details, they can sometimes over-exaggerate just how big the problem really is. It's important to remind them that even if things aren't perfect, at least they still have the chance to experience something they've never had before. I get to. Hopefully, this has helped with identifying who is unhappy or depressed among your people. It's good to let them know that you will be there for them through thick and thin, regardless of what happens. If the situation appears to be out of control, then you may have to remove yourself from their life for a time, or possibly entirely. Scary, Mary. I love that stuff. You know, it's just about giving people permission. Because it's like, I was thinking the other day, it's like, I just don't live by these rules. And I'm like, well, what rules? It's like, you're never handed rules. This is what a son does. This is what a Catholic son does. This is what a, you know, brother, you know, all that stuff. You just, and then at 50, I just decided to start doing things differently. And it's funny, I look back now, and it's just this course I wrote, you know, 50 do this, 51 do this, okay, 52 start this, okay, boom, you know, getting through the accident and the clarity and breadcrumbs and feeling better, and I just kept walking down this path and feeling better and walking down this path, and you know, it didn't happen super fast, but I was given the gift of time, and slowing down became kind of a cool thing. I understood the benefits of it, so I embraced it more. So the more time I was given, the more time I was able to enjoy. And that's rare. Like, you start slowing down with work or making money and you're tripping. You have a bunch of time to sit around and think, you're tripping. You know, that's most people and who I was. So to be going, you're going to make less money and you're going to have a lot of spare time. Cool. I'm going to use it well. And that's you know, come to my well by the water I sell. That's what I'm sharing. Walk the earth, have experiences, and then share those experiences. And the dope thing is people could listen to episode 338 and go, yeah, I don't believe you. I don't care. Just go back. Listen to all of them. Here's my story for the last 5 years. You know, it wasn't like, oh, I'm kicking ass. You know, I shared all the, you know, all the moments. I didn't edit any moments because it was just easy for me to have a moment, have an experience, and then share it. Made it through it. Yay. Made it through year one, year two, three, four. Here I am. Year five. Best I've ever been. Least I've ever had. That's value. I have value. The podcast has value. My message has value. Me being a messenger has value. Grasping all that took almost 55 years. Fantastic. Start now. Go. A lot of these, you know, I did the hospice thing and then I did an episode on loss. And then, you know, there's just, you know, a couple of the things that came up about Kobe again. And, you know, it's just kind of trippy how there's like this lingering effect. Anyways, I have a lot of respect for Tom Brady. And he wrote something that I wanted to read as well. It's called What's Really Important. I have been deeply affected by the passing of Kobe, Gigi, and the others in that tragic flight weeks ago. Since then, I've witnessed the well-deserved outpouring of love and support for the families that had so much left to give, and it's helped me reflect and gain perspective. I know that love, peace, and joy will always endure, and in this tragedy, I have learned so much. Why has this touched me in a way that it did? Why has it kept me up at night and brought me so many tears? In Kobe, we were able to witness the man in the arena. For many of us, sports show what we are made of. They define our personalities and emotions. We cannot hide from the good or bad, from the wins or losses, the joy or despair, the happiness and the pain. What you see is what it is. We aren't actors. We have found a real life stage where we become vulnerable to the world and are judged based on the outcome of each performance. And we care deeply about what we do. For some, these days are the pinnacle in their life, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it's clear to me, for Kobe, that was how he lived his life in every way. In his second chapter, you saw even more. You saw his excitement for life and for achieving in areas only he thought possible. He became more of an entrepreneur, media mogul, father, husband, and mentor, among other roles. And he didn't stop with himself. Kobe didn't care whether you were a man or woman, boy or girl, black or white, rich, poor, ordinary, extraordinary. He wanted to help you become the best you could be. His mere presence had an effect on everybody he was around. He had the energy to recognize in others what they could not recognize in themselves. I think that's why I will miss him most, because we all know the world needs more of that leadership and positivity. We recognize that he was doing the work that others don't want or want to or simply can't do. The world we live in is full of people telling kids and adults, you can't, you shouldn't, you won't, or you never will. The world we live in is teaching everyone to fear, to worry, to shame, or to give up. And that's the opposite of what Kobe stood for. That's what made Kobe a real superhero. He spoke about mentality with such conviction, about the idea that if you truly believed in something, you could achieve it. You could overcome the obstacles in your path. And not just that, he walked the walk and he did the work. He pushed others to find that same confidence. He was the real life superhero our world needs. That's what we will all miss. That's why we hurt. Because we know that he was always fighting against the norm. He was doing more than his share. Now, who is going to do the work that is still here to be done? Who is going to fight and break the norms with love and joy and inspiration? Who is going to discard fear, doubt, and hate? Who is going to carry all the load and be the superhero that he was? The answer is simply, to me, all of us. Decide to make the change in yourself. If there's anything I have learned and been inspired by through this tragic event, it is this: seize the day. That's what Kobe's always did, and that's what he wanted for us too. I felt that. All right, so some things I wanted to share. One, it was kind of a highlight. Mr. Morrison's been a dude I've been training online for, it's got to be going on almost 2 years now. But meet once a week, and you know, the previous Monday, I said next week we're going to, you know, go through your workout. He's like, okay. So we're just about to start. I said, okay, well, we're done with that workout. We're going to change it up. I said, at this point, you know, he's lost, I think, you know, almost 40 pounds or something like that. He's a big dude and he's strong. And in my mind, I know exactly what I want to do, but I want him to follow. So I go, would you rather get stronger or lose weight? And he kind of starts talking about, you know, I feel strong and this and that. I go, yeah, you know, you're 240 pound dude. I mean, you doing squats, you doing push-ups, you're moving 240 pounds. I don't think you're ever going to need more muscle than you have now at 52. And I said, but, you know, if we just focus on losing weight, that'd be fantastic. Maintain your muscle, maintain your strength, lose weight, look better, feel better. Nods, all right, perfect, here we go. So we don't even pick up a dumbbell. I do the whole workout, kind of blast through it, you know, watching him the whole time, making sure, you know, I kind of just always have this thing where I'm like watching for green lights. We're cool, we keep going, we got to stop, pause, we stop, pause. And I just had him moving his body, you know, the lunges, push-ups, squats, all this stuff, one-legged stuff, balance stuff, everything, core stuff. Gets done, sits down, and he's looking at me, he's not even breathing hard. Now, I mean, he was huffing and puffing, and it was a hard workout. I'm like, you know, you're 52. You couldn't have done that workout a year ago or any time in the recent decade or in the last decade. I go, you've been, you know, doing a workout. We'd change a couple moves. We'd add some reps, whatever. And then 3 months later, you know, we'd watch the, you know, we'd change it rarely. This was, you're going to completely stop that workout. Today we're going to do a brand new workout. Okay. It was a heart pump, and it was just almost all cardio. You know what I mean? His heart rate was up the entire time. Moving 200. It'd be like me putting on like a 70-pound weight vest and doing it. I couldn't do it. I couldn't put on a 70-pound weight vest and do what he did. And he's the type of dude just looking, going, yeah, well, okay, I did it. What? Now what? And I'm like, well, let's stop and pause and reflect, because he's not even breathing hard. And I go, you're 52 and you just did a killer workout that I just threw at you. You didn't even know what we were doing. You haven't even done a lot of the moves. And they involve mobility and they involve a ton of core strength, and his form was perfect. And this is what I get fired up on. This is what I always say to clients. No one can take that away from you. Like, that's yours. You did that. You're getting older, and you're the best you've ever been physically. He's also the best he's been, ever been mentally, emotionally, and spiritually as well. So it's all coming together. But again, this is that thing. He's not going to a gym. He's not spending a bunch of money. He's not spending a bunch of time. It's mainly been about talking about the space between his 2 years. And that's why I love the online stuff. Emphasis and focus is a little bit more on between the ears, because if we can get that, losing weight, gaining muscle, gaining flexibility is not that hard. I've had a bunch of people build muscle, gain flexibility, lose weight, but they didn't learn how to control the space between their ears, and therefore the weight came back, the strength was lost, the flexibility was lost. So just a big shout out and tip of my hat. Kind of just go, if I mention you on a podcast, to me that's a big deal. I just think that's a huge, well, for me, it's a huge compliment for me to mention you on my podcast. But, you know, that's what I mean. You moved me that much to go, wow, I got to tip my hat. I got to give a shout out. So congrats to Mr. Morrison and what you're doing. He don't know how good he is, but that's why I'm in his life. So the installation happened. It was just kind of trippy because, you know, it was like I go to RinCon now, and I'm like, if I pass out one of those cards I made, I'm like, good thing I went today. And I was out there, and I don't know if I had told this story, but, you know, a woman that I met saw a friend of hers post a picture of my art. So she gave me credit. She tagged at Found Art, and her name is Laura. And I said, thank you, Laura. Appreciate the credit. And the woman whose site it was, whose Instagram it was called Kendall. So this woman, husband, two daughters were, you know, by my balance, and I was gathering some stones, and I walked back over, and we started talking. She was, and it was just really, really cool. But they were just like such a dope family. Like, they all four stood there and talked to me for like 15 minutes about my art and about this and that. And so I mentioned I started wanting to start doing installations, and she'd go, oh, we know that landscaper guy. And I thought, okay, like, this is like the trippy stuff. I thought like a week or two ago, you know, a person to get in contact with would be a landscaper. They're going to these homes with these yards and gardens and going, hey, I know a guy. So I was like, so I gave them the installations, and she was the second person that said, well, there's like this Andy Goldsworthy thing going on. And I was like, you know, that was, you know, his documentary, Rivers and Tides, was, you know, my impetus to start all doing this. So anytime someone makes a reference to Andy Goldsworthy when they're talking about my stuff, it just tickles me to death. But like I said, then this dope family comes up. She's like, I posted your stuff, and her friend Laura. Just really cool people. It's like there's this energy being created, and it's attracting dope people. And it's like, all I have to do is just be patient. It's kind of happening. Just kind of chill. So the craziest thing was I waited probably about 3 weeks to do my first installation, doing it in Hardwick's yard. It got a few properties, but this is a really big property, a lot of land. And it's, you know, got ponds and bridges and gardens and bocce court. It's amazing. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, him and Lydia love Disneyland. And to me, like, this yard is Disneyland. Like, I could build stuff, make stuff, play in that yard the rest of my life. So to get the opportunity to put my art on that property was huge. You know, I'm like, I want to do my first one. I want to do it for you. I want to do it someone I love. So, you know, and boom, Eagle Rock, and I'm like, you know, and I love that property there. So it was just cool, but I had to wait so long. I was super excited. So I kid you not, I get up Tuesday morning and have a client at 1. I'm like, you know, go out there, do your thing, whatever happens, come back, you don't get done, you know. Chris, like, you got the whole week. Not that I was gonna take the whole week, but, you know, he had just said that, so in my mind, I can come and go as much as I want this week. So I get up every morning, I do like this run with Zen, you know, jog a little bit. I mean, I jog, and, you know, Zen, you know, stops once in a while, but it's basically I run the whole time. I say run, it's jog, you know, and it's just, you know, if I got to stop, walk, there's no pressure, but I do it every morning, 6 days a week. So get up, do that, come back, and I don't know what it was. I didn't bend over. I didn't grab nothing. I didn't do anything, but I noticed this little thing in my back, and it was like kind of getting tight. I was, you know, I'm just real sensitive to that stuff. I can just tell, and I'm like, wow, that's like a thing. And I was like, and before I could start foam rolling, it kind of started seizing up, and I was like, what? So I got down on the ground, and I was like, it was where it would kind of like take my breath. It was really pinching, and I was like, not laughing out loud, but I was like, come on. I go, I have not felt like something do something like that in my back in like over a year. In that spot, way longer. I mean, I've had the problems in my, you know, upper, you know, close to my neck, like that area and stuff, but not here where it was like a rib out or something. And I was just like going, what? And I'm like, okay, the first thing was like, I kind of know how physical this day is going to be, and I should be laying horizontally the entire day. That's what starts going through my head. So I start kind of going, okay, what are you going to do? And I'm like, if this was anybody, I would be like, dude, you cannot do nothing. Like, even doing something a little bit wouldn't be good. So to do something majorly, physically taxing would be the dumbest thing in the world. And I was just like, okay, okay. And I just was doing these really just calm moves. And I was laying there, and I was just kind of processing. I was kind of letting the thoughts go. I was just kind of letting the thoughts run in my mind, going, okay, well, if I don't, I'm like, all right. And then I started traveling down this path, which was fantastic. I'll just lay here, watch movies. I'll train my client. I'll go tomorrow. And that's kind of where I got. Like, oh, I got to go. I got to do this. Was that just how excited, you know, because prepping and getting ready. And my car is ready. It's full. I've been carrying around these stones. And I got a lot of weight in my car. I've been driving around with. And I just really want to get going on this. So for this inside voice to go, all right, you just won't go today. You just go tomorrow, which was like the easiest thing in the world. But it was not who I was for 53 years. I would have been like, oh, I got it. I would have been fighting. Like, how do I get out this door? I would have just been pushing and pushing. And I went the exact opposite. I went to let go right now. 5 minutes later, it was gone. And I have no idea. There wasn't a big pop. There wasn't anything. But it was like it just started stretching. And again, it was like this. How one deals with the test directly determines the outcome of the test. It was like this mini test. You're excited here. Now you can. Now what? Okay. I'll go tomorrow. Oh, damn. So I started kind of walking around the house, moving a little bit. And all of a sudden, I was like, I'm going. And then I was like, wow, I was pretty fired up. And it's like probably a 25-30 minute drive. So I'm like, you know, I'll just pop some ibuprofen. I'll get in the car and I'll just start driving. I'll be, you know, I'm fine seated. And I got there and I started, and it was gone. Now, I remember how dope the spot was, but I forgot all the steps walking up to, and then how far it was to the spot. And I started thinking about all the stuff I had. There was 9 total trips. And one of the, you know, those milk crates, I had 4 of those. One of them had to weigh 100 pounds. So up and down and up and down and up and down. And I was thinking that, I was like, you know, an hour and a half ago, I was canceling the day because my back was out. And now I was like, okay, I had no idea. I mean, it was like a workout times a workout. But I didn't care. It was like driving to the hospice. It takes me 45 minutes to get Camarillo. It took me an hour and a half. I'm like, I don't care. I'm walking up, down, up, down, up, down, because I'm there. And this is the cool. I wrote this note. I was present. I was present the whole time. I would stop. I'd take pictures of Zen. It was quiet. You would just hear birds like the entire time. It was just quiet. I mean, a car would drive by and you could faintly hear it. But, I mean, it was like being in a Zen garden to begin with. And I'd take a little break. I'd eat something. I'd take a picture. I was filming the whole time. I mean, I was just so present. And I mean that I was very present when I was doing. You're 54 and you're doing a found art installation in someone's yard, and that's what you want to start doing. And there's a lot of energy and a lot of this and that, but this is your actually, you know, your first one, and you get to do this. And it's not some little bitty backyard of someone. It's, this is a big, cool property where it matters. You know what I mean? Like, you couldn't just go to dig a hole and put a stone. And I wasn't nervous. I wasn't anything. It was different once I started, because I'm like, I'm going to make this permanent. I'm going to glue it. That was a weird vibe for me, because I just start stacking. If it falls, I restack it. If I want to move it, I move it. This is like, okay, you're going to do it, then you're going to glue it. It's not going. I'm like, that was just, again, different. It wasn't right, wrong, good, or bad. It was just different. I had a felt that. So the next thing I realized, this was the best. No shovel. No spade. Nothing. It was a hand trowel. Little hand with, you know, one little handle fits in your hand and a little blade like 5 inches long. That's what I had. And it didn't matter. I was like, all right, turn the camera on. And I went, you know, I first, you know, just measured 4 foot, which we had kind of decided on. And I knew that wasn't enough. So I went to 5, painted the circle, just started going around it with that little trowel, started digging it up. And it was like, stick the trowel in, grab the piece of sod, grass, pry it open, grab it with my hand, rip it up, throw it in a bucket. So it was one handful at a time. And you go, oh, 5 foot circle, that's not going to, well, it seems like a lot when I was pulling up the sod. But nothing was going to stop me. Now I had lifted, I had carried, I had done the trips. And now I'm tearing up the sod. But I was just, it was just like, I'm doing it. It was just like I was eating. Just moving forward, not thinking I'm hungry, I'm eating, I'm hungry, I'm eating, I'm hungry, still not full, I'm going to keep eating. I just kept doing, kept going, kept going, kept going. And all of a sudden I was like, poured out all my sand and it wasn't enough. And it was just this easy decision. It's like, well, you're done now. You know, I mean, it was 2.5 hours, and that was 2.5 hours of physical. And I was fine. And I might go to the beach tomorrow, get more sand, talk to Chris, you know, I train him on Wednesdays, come back Thursday morning, just like the Tuesday morning you were doing. You got a client at 1, you finish, you know, whatever it takes Thursday morning. And, you know, made, you know, time-lapse videos, and it was just super cool. Like, I was totally stoked about, like, the whole thing when I left. 1, I was able to go, wasn't hurt. 2, killed it physically. Like, that was a workout, like I said, workout from hell. And just smiling and happy, and it was because I was present. I was just so, this is awesome. Look what I'm doing. And I ain't even got to the creative part. So we fast forward, we get to 48 hours later. I set out the stones. I got every, that was the cool thing. Like, I remembered everything. Like, I had everything I needed. So it turned out to be 7 bags of stone, which were like 15 to 20 pound bags of stone. bags, 15 to 20 pounds each bag. And I, 4 the first day, and I brought back 3 the next day. I still could have used more. It was probably something I'm not going to do anymore. I'm definitely not going to go, I'll bring sand, because it was a ton of work and I still could have brought more. Because I just wanted more. I don't know, I just wanted this thick feeling. And then it was like, well, now I'm packing it down. I'm like, I want like gravel or some sort of sand or dirt or something, but I'm not bringing beach sand, or I'm going to charge a ton of money. That's, again, a great, because I learned a lot. And then I'm not cutting up no one's sod. Especially if you don't have any tools. But I was like, okay, if someone says, well, can you cut a hole in my side? I'm like, this is much a charge. Well, can you bring sand from the beach for ours? This is how much I charge. So I got all that down because I was in it, aware, and going, all right, what do you want to do again? What do you not want to do? What would you do? And if you didn't, how much would you charge? So this is just a great, awesome learning experience. So I'm setting up everything. I'm like, okay, well, here I go. Like, I'm going to place these stones like where they're going to stay. You know, I do it at the beach and it could be gone in 15 minutes, an hour that day. Tide, weather, wind, dogs, whatever. And, you know, the fact that I was filming was so cool because some were time lapse and some were live. But it was just, I have this just great memory. And I put all the videos together and it's about 8 minutes. And it's from the very beginning to like the very end. And I didn't really know what I was doing. Like, when I first started, I had stones. I kind of knew I was going to do a balance. I didn't really know where, didn't know what. I knew what the top stone was going to be. I had 2. I picked the one. And that's the creative process. Like, I just started it. And it would just boom, 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 boom. Changed it once. Looked at it. Went, okay, let me do this. And the total sidebar. They got a dog. And it's called an otter hound. And they named it Zoltar, Chris and Lydia. And it's the biggest puppy I've ever seen. And it was the cutest, coolest. But I went to train Chris on Wednesday and they brought it down and completely fell in love with, like, it is the dopest dog. And it was all over me. So smelled Zen, but dogs dig me anyway. So we just had this awesome moment. So I did these three separate stones, and I went one for Chris, one for Lydia, and one for Zoltar. Like, I end up using 142 stones. So, like, this whole energy thing was there. Like, each stone I picked up, each stone I gathered thinking of them, each stone I carried, brought over here and placed thinking of them, and then three specific ones set aside thinking of them. And then, you know, once I would lay out a certain thing, then I would go back and glue. If I was putting the stones on top, then I'd lay them out, and I'd go through it all and glue it. And then I had this polyurethane spray, so I did that, because like when you wet these stones, they look really good. Well, that's how you make them look wet, spraying with polyurethane. So when I got done, I made this little thing on the side, these little accent things, and I was so stoked and I was so happy. And then I had a bunch of stones left. I had like four or five trips down to the car, got in my car, was started driving away, and there was no money, there was no people clapping, there was no response, there was no one around, it was just quiet. And that was a little bit different, because I was just like, okay, bye. Just, you know, I don't go there. And, you know, Chris is coming, you know, he's gone the whole weekend, he comes back, he's got to be, I might not be able to see it for a week. And I was like, that was just weird to me. But it was like the hospice thing, it was like this cool thing that hit me, and it goes, it doesn't matter. These external things are going to come and go. They're going to begin and they're going to end, and they do not have anything to do with you. Like how you are. You're the best you've ever been. Yeah, you did that. Hospice. Yeah, you did that. First installation. Now, go take Zen to the puppy park. And that's what I did. That client on Thursday ended up canceling, so I just stayed and hung out, took pictures until I was totally done, and right from there, I went right to the puppy park and just became a normal Thursday. But inside, I was like, man, 2020. It's February of 2020, and I gave a speech at a hospice group, and I did an installation in a yard, and I've never done either one. It's just like that excitement, but it's like, but be patient. It's not like, oh, I'm going to do one every week now. It's like, no, you might not do one for a while, but you got to and you're on that path. And again, the patience just came into my mind. You get it because you get excited. Okay, now what? I did that. Okay, now. And that was the old me. It's like barely able to enjoy this one. And I was, what's next? What am I going to do? How? Not this time. I was like, man. Someone said, hey, you want to do one of those next week? I'd be like, nope. Because it turned out to be about 6 to 8 hours of prep, gathering all the sand, gathering all the stone. And I know that will probably drop in the future, but it's like, you know, how do I go, okay, this is how much work, this is how much I charge. 2.5 hours for the physical, 3.5 hours for the creative, so that's 6 hours. So you're looking at, you know, 12, 14 hours of creative labor. So I got kind of numbers in my head, and I feel really, really good about it. But I was just like, yeah, I mean, this is something I want to do, and boom, and wow, and get paid good, and then be like, all right, I'm done for a month. Because just, it can be exhausting, having to, like I said, to go, okay, I got to go there, and, you know, because there's different sand at every beach, and the best sand is at Rincon, and that's the furthest beach, but that's where I go, because it's got the best stones, and it's dog friendly, and it's everything I love, but it's like, okay, I need this, I got to drive out there, I got to gather it, 5 flights of steps, like, it's a big deal, but I'm like, yeah, but no one else is doing it. So we'll see where it ends up. But I'm stoked and I feel good about it. I remember like in the past having ideas or whatever, but not having this, I know, conviction. Right now I'm just convicted. No one does what I do here. No one can do. If someone was physical enough to do that side of it, I don't think they'd have the creative side to do what I do. But the whole thing, there's no one doing that in California. And that's like a cool, like that's not cocky, that's not arrogant, that's not nothing, that's just knowledge. That's just fact. I know people who balance stones. I know where they live. And I know the styles and who I adopted what from and where and all that. And I'm like, yeah, no one else is doing it. You come over. Go on Facebook. Go to Found Art. And go to any of the groups I belong to. And look at all the pictures. All the stone balancers, land artists all over the world. And see where they live. And nobody's doing what I do in L.A. along the West Coast. So therefore, no one's doing it around those areas in the yards either. So if you're listening and you live Santa Barbara to San Diego, you're in luck. Message me, holler if you know someone. But that's what I'm going to do, these cool Zen accent pieces for your yard and gardens. I'm totally stoked. So after the puppy park, we end up usually going to the river, and we walk. There's this path along the river, and that's where I met that artist, Ed Flynn, who's a taught art at Santa Monica College. And I haven't seen him in a while. And one day I went by, and I just put one of my installation cards in his mailbox and messaged him. I said, hey, check it out, because I was excited. It's like I like showing him stuff now. Well, there he is outside. He's got a cool backyard. It's very peaceful, and he's eating breakfast. And I'm like, Ed. He's like, Tom, come on in. So Zen and I walk in, and Zen just starts walking around right away. I'm like, good. I go, I just finished. And I hadn't even looked at the video, time lapse, anything yet. And I start showing him, and I'm talking about it with him. And it was just so cool. I got done. I go, you know, Ed, I was so happy you were out, because I don't know if I'm going to tell what I told you to anyone else, because he's an artist. You know what I mean? And what I said and how I said it, I'm like, I don't, you know, I'm just, I, you know, it was just cool that he was there and I had so much to share and he listened. So at the end, he's like, you know, in Santa Monica along the median in between the Hollywood or the Santa Monica Boulevard, there's art installations. And I said, yeah. He says, I'm thinking about doing one of those. I go, cool. And he says, this Meridian, he called it, and I've never been there, but kind of in the area where I walk by the river where he lives. And so I just got, you know, just switched. You know, I was all excited. I'm like, oh, Ed, that'd be so cool. And he goes, well, I've never done anything about around here. I'm like, you know, he plants trees around the river. He cleans up around the river. He's just a very environmentally sound dude. And he loves that area. And he's lived there like for 40 years. And he's an artist. And he was an art teacher. And I'm like, that would be just so cool if you did something. And he kind of started talking about what he would do. And I was like, yeah, and I'm putting on my arms, and I was just all excited for him because I was in a great mood, but he was just, you know, sitting here telling me because he hadn't, you know, really talked about doing something new and doing something, you know, like an installation, you know, outside like that. I was like, so cool. And he goes, well, I'm going to use local artists, and you're a local artist. And my world stopped. I was just like, what? Like, we're talking about you. And the whole label thing's always been weird. Like, I had a real problem saying, I'm an actor. Cause it's like, okay, you're in L.A., you're a trainer, you're trying to make money and pursuing acting. You're not an actor. You know, it was always this weird thing. When people like, oh, I'm... And, you know, the very, very first time I was out doing my artwork 12 years ago when I came up with the name Found Arts, because the guy was walking behind me, said, hey, I found all your art, and I called it Found Art. Are you the artist? I got all freaked out. You know, it threw me. I'm like, what? So, like, I don't know. Are you an artist? I don't know. It's just a weird question to me. I mean, I would just say on paper, yeah. But if someone was sitting here talking, I don't go, yes, I'm Tom. I'm an artist. Because I guess there's a definition if you're being paid, if you're making money. You know, if you are being paid, you know, if you earn a living being an actor, then you're an actor. You know, if you earn a living selling your art, then you're an artist. That definition kind of floats in back, but there's a bunch of struggling artists. So yes, I will say I'm an artist, but that you are had never really came with such confirmation, because I really look up to Ed and his wife. They're both artists. And, you know, and he's, like I said, he's an artist, and he knows all these dope dudes, and he taught art, and I just have a ton of respect for him. And he goes, well, I'm going to use four or five local artists, and you're one of them, so I'd like you to do a piece. And I'm like, what's happening in my world? And it's like, that's right away what I want to share. I've been telling all y'all what I've been doing. And all of a sudden I cut that out. I cut those people out. It's lonelier. It's quieter. I find the value in the quiet. I find the contentment, the peace, and the power in that small arena. And I vibrate at a higher frequency and I attract different things because I've been doing a lot of this stuff for a long time. And January was unbelievable. February was unbelievable. But for February to not be done and me to get that installation done and just be going, okay, I'm done. I'm just, you know, going to rest on those laurels. And then I run into this artist. Like, I know one artist. And he's like, I'm going to do this thing. And right away I started thinking about what I want. I'm like, if I get to do that, because I'll just, let me asterisk this. I did the speech at the hospice, and there's a guy there, Kevin. He took the picture, and he goes, you know, can I call you? We'll do an interview, and blah, blah, blah. I go, yeah. Never heard from him. And Jim, my friend that I met on the beach, and the whole hospice thing started from it. He has a friend and that has some sort of paper, something in that area. And he goes, I'm going to call him. Maybe he can do an article interview on you and your art. And, you know, you spoke at the hospice. I said, great. Never heard from him. And then two people now said that, you know, they know landscapers and they'll let me know, and I haven't heard from them yet. So again, it's good that there's the buzz. It's the good that there's the chit chat, but you cannot sit here and just hold your breath and wait, because a lot of these things flutter, you know, in, out, back, forth, you know, kind of whatever. So it's not in stone. There's no guarantee, but if I get to do outside installation along with artists, one being Ed Flynn, it's just gonna be really good to me. So, I'm gonna end with this last story. There's two more things, but. So about a week ago, head back up to Rincon, and there's this really little girl, and she's kind of walking up a little closer, like she's interested, but can she? And I wave, and she waves, and she finally walks up, and I go, what's your name? She said, Chloe. And I said, how old are you? And she said, 6. And I said, do you live here? She says, no, we're visiting. And she starts asking about my stone stuff. And so I said, you know, you want to put some down? So I'm handing her some stones, and we're putting the stones down, and just kind of cool in a way. Like, I just liked the moment. But then she says, you know, we came out here for a funeral. We've come out here a few times. Something kind of like that. Like, more than once we've been here because people in our family have died. And I was like, I had no idea what to say to this young little girl. And she wasn't sad. She wasn't just like, yeah, you know, we've come out here for funerals. We've been here for a few. And I was like, so that was a Sunday, and it was really packed. And I thought it was some surfing competition because there was more surfers than I'd ever seen. And people were starting to leave, so I found a parking spot. And when I was walking down, I asked somebody, and they said a surfer had passed. And they did this swim out, surf out, where all the surfers just swam out. And it was pretty huge. It was pretty spectacle. And I thought, wow, how cool that they did that. So now you fast forward. It's about 3-4 days. This was 2 days ago, so it was Wednesday. And this guy walks up, and I did this really big, heavy stone one. And I was starting to do the side pieces, the side stones. And he said, hey, like your stuff, really appreciate it. You met my niece. I went, oh, the little Chloe, yeah. And then I said to him, I go, yeah, you know, she said she came out for a few funerals. That's when she comes out. I got to really know what to say to her. And this guy, Don, gets real quiet. And he was like struggling. And I was like, he's like, well, what Chloe was referring to. And he's just really getting choked up, fighting back tears. He goes, it was my son that passed away 2 weeks ago while he was surfing. And I was like, you know, I just got done speaking at a hospice 2 weeks ago and talking about loss on my podcast. Like, I'm like, what? Like there's no one around. It's just me and this dude comes walking up. Boom. And I'm like, wow. like it was like a punch. You know, with Zen, I love it. I'm out there. I'm building this big piece. Like, you know, it's awesome. I love it. I'm going to finish it, take some pictures, hit the road. You know, best I've ever been. Hey, you like my art? Thank you. Hey, you want to take some pictures? Great. What? You what? He was 38 years old, and I guess he, I'm not sure what he had, but they assumed he had a seizure. And he was alone, just where he was by the time someone got to him. It was too late. And he's just trying to struggle and tell the story and tell, you know, he's just had good energy and everybody loved him. And he's like, there were more surfers out here than before. And this guy says, here, if you need this house right here, relatives, stay here. You can stay here. And people buying him, you know, meals and just like this love. Like just came around and surrounded him. But I mean, here's this guy by himself just choking up to some stranger. And I go, I'm just going to dedicate this piece. So he went in and got, came out with a camera. And he's like, well, you're not really done yet. I'll come back. I said, well, take a picture now because I did this balance thing on top. I said, that might not be up, but take a picture now and then come back. And so when I got done, I wrote in the sand for Lauren, his son's name, and I drew a big heart around it. And then Zen and I left like with this heavy heart. Like, that one was spoiled. Nothing was bad. I was just like, it turned out cool. Like, I just winged this heart. Like, I just draw these circles in the sand and things. I don't, like, erase. You can't really erase and go over. But I just made this dope heart. I didn't want to do any more. Just one ring. One line. And it was a huge, you know, 40, 50-foot heart. Because this is a big piece I made. And I'm like, man, I hope he comes back out and he sees this. You know, because it was 2 o'clock, you know, tide's going to come up pretty soon. And so I just want, I mean, again, left, didn't know if he saw it, didn't know if anyone else saw it. And then today I just posted it, you know, the making of it, which was, you know, I had to edit it down just to make it like 5 minutes. And on Instagram, you can only have a minute video. So I put 5 different clips of it up, but just putting it out there. You know, he doesn't have Instagram. He's not on anything like that. So Don himself is not going to see it. I hope he saw it live. But I thought, well, there's a cool thing going on that I'm down there in a great place, spiritual dude with my dog, creating these pieces, and people are being drawn to it and attracted to it and liking it and appreciating it. And it's helping them. I mean, my art is helping people heal. That's a trippy thing. It's almost like a responsibility that I love. You know, it's not like, oh, I got pressure. It's like, I just think that's amazing. And again, this is my purple. This is what floats around in my head today versus what was in for 48 years. So I tell everybody, 48 years is a lot, a long time. And it's typically more than the people I talk to have been alive. So when I'm not talking to these people, not going here, not doing this, not having that, not doing this, not having this money, not having anything more than I've ever had, having less of everything, I'm having these moments. So come to my well by the water I sell. My January, February of 2020 is amazing. And it's not because there's a bunch of money and a bunch of, you know, accolades and, you know, it's a bunch of likes. It's not about that. It's about these moments that are moving and touching and real. Like from the Kobe thing to all the Brett's email to Tom Brady to what's going on in the world to how people are talking to what's sharing. And then I'm at the beach doing what I've been doing forever. And I speak in hospice. And then this guy comes up and I'm dedicating the piece to his son that passed away. You know, right there at that beach where his son laid lifeless is where my art was and why I touched this guy. And there's no way I'm able to choreograph, design, plan, execute any of this. I just get to experience it. So if you're the best you, vibrate, you know, vibrating into a higher frequency, you attract that which you're like. And I'm like, well, my tell you what's going on. This is what's going on. It must be what's happening. I feel great. Look what's going on. So just a shout out to Don and Lauren and people at RinCon, and just a cool place, cool people, and a lot of cool stuff's happening along my pro-you path. All right, last thing I'm going to chat about is what pro-you podcast means to me. And I did not write anything down. Just what I wrote. What PYP means to me. It's all, when it comes to mind initiatives, I'm just thankful. Like, a couple times when I thought if I didn't have it, like, it's just so uncomfortable thinking about not having the podcast in my life. I mean, like, I remember way back when I was sending out those emails, someone said, you should have a podcast. I had no idea. I was like, pod. I just, you know, a pod, what a pod is, you know, something you go inside of, a pod, like, what? What's a, and I answered, I go, what's a podcast? I had no idea. But those Sunday morning messages were me reaching out, trying to affect people. And then I went how many years in between, and then started dabbling with Mikey Furman and stopped there and then didn't. And then 5 years or whatever, fast forward, and then, hey, Chris, you know, I'd like to do a podcast. Greenlit, poof, Pro-U podcast comes alive. March. 5 years ago. And I'm like, wow, 5 years. That's a long time. I mean, in the good way. Like, I feel great about that. Like, you know, number of episodes, 338. But, I mean, you know, it's just 5 years of not quitting. 5 years of not stopping. Like, there's more value in it because of that. To me, just personally. Like, if I haven't dropped the ball in 5 years, there's more value in that. How much I have healed. Like, going to therapy is the same exact thing. And if I was like, okay, I need therapy, but I'm not going to go. I need the podcast, but I'm not going to do it. Like, if you took the podcast out, I wouldn't have healed. Like, I've gotten friends, stories that people have shared. You know, I have been moved more by listeners of this podcast than I have been moved by anything in my life. And a few of those amazing people have become my online clients. So it's like, wow, this is, I mean, it's just huge to me. I mean, Pro-U Podcast has helped me heal. It has brought me clarity. It has brought me understanding. It has enlightened my perspective and just helped me to evolve. If you take out the Pro-U podcast, if you take out my Pro-U podcast from my life, I would not be who I am today. So that's where just that thank you thing, because again, if I was just recording this and not sending it out, there were no listeners. There was no one replying, no one hollering back, no one saying anything. No one to train, no one to talk to. It would just be a void. It would just be a big, empty void. So, you know, I talk about when I hit, you know, 50, and I was like, wow, okay, I get it. I like me now. I like this. I could die. Like, I'm like, I did some things after 50 that I'm just, okay, cool, because I just didn't feel those feelings. I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't feel confident. I didn't feel convicted. I didn't feel proud. I didn't really like me a whole, like, not like I didn't like me, but I was like, after a while, I was like, well, I like me. It was just, I wasn't really saying it. I wasn't saying I don't like me. I just wasn't saying it. But then I started liking me, and I was like, I'm saying that for the first time. I like me. I like my life. I love my house. I love my dog. I love what we do. I love everything about my life right now. I'm like, okay, hold up. What do you mean? Dude, you're turning 55. You've never said those things before. That's something. So come to my well by the water I sell. I'm not telling anybody to do what I did. I'm not telling anybody what to do. I'm just telling, suggesting, hoping, praying, wishing that you apply what I've applied to your path, to your pro-you path. Deem yourself worthy. Like, I would love it if a bunch of listeners said, hey, this is what I'm experiencing. Hey, made these choices. Hey, feeling better. Hey, eating better. Hey, started moving. Hey, stopped talking to the negative people. Hey, quit that job that was negative. Hey, I'm believing in myself. I'm deeming myself worthy. I'm getting up every morning. I'm exercising. I'm meditating. I'm stretching. I'm listening to the podcast. I'm seeing a therapist. I started talking to a friend. I'm trying to be okay in the quiet time. I'm trying to have time to slow down, stop, and pause and reflect and be okay with that. That's what I want. That's why I'm doing what I do. I am a messenger, and that is my message. And that is the most peaceful thing I've ever been able to say in my entire life. So if you've listened to this episode only, or you've been listening for the last 5 years, from the bottom of my heart,
thank you, thank you, thank you for listening. It means the world to me. This podcast means the world to me.
So remember, you are worth it. Welcome to your Pro You moment. As always, stoked that you are here. Let us begin to do that which we do along the Pro You path. We control things that we can control. Simultaneously, we learn how to let go of that which we cannot control. Trust me on that one. If we can sit on the floor, cross our legs, fantastic. Eyes closed, neutral neck, shoulders over the hips, navel tucked into the spine, and we will draw the inhale through the nose. Slowly, we'll elongate it, make it last, control it. Allow the exhale out the mouth, slow it down. Elongate it. Control it. The in and the out will be controlled by you connecting your mind and your body, making you ever so present in this pro-you moment. That will be what occupies the space between your ears. If anything else enters, calmly, quietly, ask it to leave and return to your breath. Do this to the best of your ability for 180 seconds. I will let you know when time is up. You may begin now. Thank you. Congratulations on another successful pro you moment. I was just sitting here and it hit me going, you know, that's my advice. To start. You have to be 100% sure, not even 50% sure. Just start. Little things done consistently. Bam! Fast forward 5 years. Here I am. 338 podcasts. You know, there was definitely some twists and turns. It was not a straight line. And I look at it now as I was just getting comfortable. So I could become the messenger and deliver my message. But the vital, omnipotent, most importante, start. Just begin right here, right now, today, this moment, because you're worth it. I mean, I did not have the thought in my mind, I want to start a podcast and I can't wait to have 5 years. I can't wait to get over 300 episodes. I just wanted to do one. Literally. Because it's something I thought of for a very long time. And how I struggled in my life. I was just in a place that seemed very far away from having any clear message to share with anyone. But to get to the point where I was like, I know what my message is. I want to do one podcast. That was my goal. And since then, I've been very happy. Because from number 2 to 338, those were the gifts, those were the blessings. That was the icing on the cake for me. And that's why I didn't have a big plan. It's going to take it moment by moment, step by step, and just try to grow through everything that I was going through as a man, as a podcaster, as a dog owner. As a spiritual being, having a human experience. Start today, deem yourself worthy. Before you know it, time flies by and you have something to be proud of. Which makes you feel good. And you've benefited the entire time. That's the pro you path. That's what I hope for you. Peace and God bless.